your work, as you say yourself, it was a very busy and a very interesting place to be at the time.
Yeah.
Can you just take me through a day when you went in and started work?
Well, it was very handy for me. I was living on Orchard Road, so I had it timed to a T. I could leave my house at 9:04 and be in work on time for 9:00. So it was great from that point of view. And in fact, all my working life, I've worked relatively close to the place of employment. When we'd go in the morning, we would have a lot of orders that would have been generated the previous day for local and overseas suppliers. They were then sorted into LibreArch files for the different suppliers. And we had big page-a-day diaries where we'd look at the order, and if they said, delivery 6 weeks, well then, 4 weeks' time, we'd note it in our diary to start telexing them. Telex was the main mode of communication then, to say, you said we'd have this in 6 weeks, like it should be ready for shipping now, and to keep lighting the fire under them. And the same for the local suppliers. But for the international suppliers, because of the extra shipping time and customs clearance time and that, very often they would have, the engineering department would have a slot where they could get access to a machine for maintenance. Mm-hmm. And it was critical that the parts were actually there for them. So if there was any hiccup at all, yours truly was the guy who was getting the roasting to produce the parts. To a lesser extent, the local manufacturers, because a lot of the local suppliers, there would have been alternative suppliers for, say, industrial machinery spares and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of the stuff I was dealing with was specific to the actual paper machine. There was one company called Beloit Italia, and the only people you could buy material from them was from them. So, you didn't have an option. You couldn't go to the hardware shop in the corner and buy a part. There was no alternative.
Second place to go.
So it was interesting from that point of view that a lot of the day would be spent between the engineers or the manufacturing people ringing up to say, any sign of that stuff coming in, where is it, when will I have it? And we had to liaise very closely with the engineering department under Barney Fitzpatrick, and with the engineers who were working down, Johnny Campbell, Brandon Halford, names of the, you probably have more names than I would, Tommy.
Terry O'Neill
was the chief engineer. Jerry Rahley was the electrical engineer. Brendan Dennehan was the man in charge of the drawing office. And so there was an awful lot of contact between the engineering end of things and the stores department and the purchasing department to try and make sure that the part was there when the guys needed it for fitting.
Was there a process in trying to get the best price?
Well, yes and no. You'd always send items out to tender. The person who was looking after the project would give you a detailed spec and very probably engineering drawings, which would be sent out to the suppliers. Now, for items like, say, bearings for the machines, you could buy them from a number of different sources. And in cases like that, then it was a question of, okay, who's the cheapest? He is, but he's terrible when it comes to delivery. He's always late. So you'd have to make a decision as to, okay, well, even though supplier A might be the cheapest, he wasn't the most reliable, whereas supplier C might be the dearest. But if he said it was going to be there, it would be there. Yeah. So you had to try and use your experience to place the order with the guy who was going to give you the most reliable delivery time.
Because really, your department was extremely important. If you were going to make a profit, the buying was extremely important to get it right.
Well, yeah, that's something. When I was in the mills, I studied with the Irish Institute for Purchasing and Materials Management, which is...
Where was that run?
Well, it was run, I can't remember where their offices were, but they did have a small staff, And there was a guy who worked for Loctite, whose name will come back to me in a minute. There was another guy in Donnelly's, the builders, and they would have been the key instigators of trying to get this the Irish version of this institute up going. Yeah. The equivalent British institution would be the IPS, the Institute of Purchasing and Supply.
Yes.
Whereas in Ireland, it was the Irish Institute of Purchasing and Materials Management.
Okay, and was this a government
initiative? No, it wasn't. It was just a group of businessmen
who decided
that, you know, yeah, we need to try and form and train people up in the negotiation and that sort of, and standards, and to have very high standards, and also to have ethical standards.
And looking back at that time, was that a good course to do?
Oh, yes, it was, yeah. In fact, they're still running courses today and doing a lot of training today.
Yeah.
And it was a very good course to do, and certainly, like, if people had studied for their certificate in storekeeping or diploma in purchasing or whatever the various different courses were, if you were going to a job interview and you had this piece of paper, you know, it certainly was beneficial to you, as in any case, you know,
of course,
even today, you know. And that and the experience then that you'd pick up from talking to other members.
Yes.
At, say, coffee mornings and things like that, if there was items that were of common interest, like, for instance, if there was a shipping strike or a transport strike or a fuel shortage or something like that, we could all put our heads together and try and come up with some way of, you know, maybe sharing a container to group freight coming in rather than...
Oh, yes, yes.
Rather than that. But it is very true what you say, and it's still very important today. If your purchasing is efficient, you can effectively make profit for the company before the company sells a single nut or bolt. Mm. You know, if you don't buy the stuff in at the right price, that's the foundation block upon which everything else is built.
Right.
And any savings you can make in that price will directly affect your profit line.
When you were importing the parts of machinery that you needed and other items, the paperwork that was needed to transport all these goods, a little bit more difficult then, I would imagine, than it is today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now that we're in the EU and goods are in free circulation, I mean, we've all seen the disappearance of customs posts and so on. I'm sure people of my age certainly would remember that even if you were going across the border to Northern Ireland, you had to queue up, and depending on the mood that the customs officer was in, depended on whether you got through in a hurry or not.
And did that apply to you getting in bits and pieces from abroad?
Not to the same extent. We didn't bring in a huge amount of stuff through the north or from the north. Most of the stuff would have been coming into Dublin Port. And we would have employed a number of customs clearance agents who were specifically up to speed on all the different customs codes and customs tariffs and rates of duty that had to be paid and so on. But, like, we'd have to have, if any of the items originated in the UK under the Anglo-Irish Free Trade Agreement, all items had to be accompanied by a form called, I think it was a Certificate of Origin form, stating, for instance, in the case of China clay, English China clay, we have produced this item here in the UK, and therefore it falls under the Ireland-England Free Trade Agreement. Now, if that shipment arrived in and we didn't have one of these Certificate of Origin forms, it would just sit there, it wouldn't be cleared. Or they would say, well, we don't know where this came from, and they would charge the going rate of duty on it. And there was two types of duty. There was customs duty and excise duty. And again, within the purchasing department, we didn't have the expertise to determine, well, what is the right customs classification to put on this particular product to make it clear customs at the lowest possible rate. We also, as I mentioned earlier, had to have import licenses from the Department of Industry and Commerce to enable us to import, to actually allow us to import goods into the state. And again, if you didn't have those import licenses, you would experience a delay in getting the items cleared through customs. But we had to rely on experts whose sole job it was,
yeah,
was customs clearance and having all the paperwork.
It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Well, it is. And again, you know, I mean, the kids today, they get on the internet and click, 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 and 3 days later, the guy from Amazon or UPS arrives, and there's the parcel. And it's amazing. Now, I mean, if stuff is coming in from the States, you can get hit for duty, depending on the product. But anything coming from anywhere in Europe is in free circulation.
So simple,
you know. Yeah. A bit like the way technology has moved on with communications even. Like, in my particular job, I used to have to make an awful lot of international calls. And my boss, John Campion, was always saying, "You're making an awful lot of calls, Tim." You know, I said, "Well, I have to." You know, as I said earlier, the telex machine was something that was... There was a telex machine in the office, and it was clattering away all the time. And I'm sure if I said even to my daughters, "What's a telex machine?" they wouldn't know what I was talking about. But it was the main way of communication.
Yeah, yeah.